This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 2nd of August 2024. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 1st of August 2024. Your readers today are Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Crisis Talks at the Cathedral, Residents Put Pressure On Over Hostel, Tears Shed As Service Honours Homeless Ben. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Crisis Talks at the Cathedral. Members of local choirs will meet the Dean of Winchester to discuss the crisis in music at the Cathedral. Representatives of 10 choirs will see the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle and the new interim cathedral music director, Andrew Lucas, in September. The meetings follow a letter to the Chronicle on July the 11th and signed by representatives of the choirs, Ashton Singers, Hampshire Choral Festival, Jane Austen Singers, Kingsgate Voices, Southampton Philharmonic Choir, Southern Voices, St Cross Chapel Choir, Wainfleet Singers, Winchester Cathedral Chamber Choir and Winchester Consort. It raised fears about the loss of senior musicians, bullying and poor management. The crisis has attracted national media attention. The letter said, "We are deeply concerned by the imminent departure for unexplained reasons of Director of Music Andrew Lubsden, one of England's top conductors and organists, as well as the loss of lay clerks and organists, and that the cathedral's musical reputation and influence are being undermined by reports that could inflict lasting damage. On the agenda will be how the cathedral and local choirs can work together better and the scope of the musical director's role." Alison Spottiswood, chair of Southern Voices, said, "We very much welcome the Dean's invitation to meet to discuss strengthening the cooperation between the Cathedral and our local amateur choirs, who owe such a debt of gratitude for decades of support from the Cathedral's extraordinary musicians. The Dean has invited us to comment on the future scope of the Director of Music role, and we hope we can do so before the Director of Music position is advertised. The Dean also indicated willingness to offer greater opportunities to local choirs, which would create immense goodwill from the community. So many people really value cathedral music, and that was the point of our letter. It is surely good for all for the church to have the goodwill of all these people." In a statement, the Dean said, "We have invited representatives of local choirs to an informal get-together in September with our new interim Director of Music, Andrew Lucas. The Cathedral and its musicians have a vital role to play in the wider musical life of Winchester and Hampshire, and we would like to look at ways in which our bonds can be strengthened."
Residents Put Pressure On Over Hostel. An action group has been set up by residents who have reached breaking point over antisocial behaviour around a Winchester hostel. Hyde Antisocial Behaviour Action Group is putting pressure on local authorities and the police to tackle the increasing problems at West View House in Hyde Gate. Last week, a crisis meeting was held with residents grilling representatives from A2 Dominion, which operates the home, and the City Council, responsible for tackling homelessness in the city. Neighbours have been repeatedly complaining to the police about law breaking, including brazen drug dealing, constant foul language, threatening behaviour, sex and urinating in public, leaving neighbours, mainly OAPs, feeling unsafe in their homes. Hostel residents regularly appear in court for shoplifting from city centre stores. Several have been jailed but allowed to return to live at the hostel, say neighbours. As a result of the meeting, police issued a dispersal order from 4 p.m. on Friday, July the 26th, until 4 p.m. on Sunday, July the 28th. One resident noticed a significant improvement. Julian Perkins, 80, said, "The dispersal order was very effective. I just hope this continues. But Wednesday and Thursday nights were horrendous, the worst they have ever been. The number one objective needs to be to make sure management systems are in place to ensure repeat offenders don't get allowed back. The action group has been set up by residents of Highgate and the surrounding area." Group spokesperson and former city councillor Rose Burns said, "Following years of living with antisocial behaviour, sometimes 24/7 during the summer, residents in Hyde have had enough. We have set up this group to challenge the statutory authorities, Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, A2 Dominion and the police, and finally to get action from them, not only in the short term, but permanently, to eradicate this serious blight on our lives. We are all sympathetic to the situation of those living in Westview, some of whom are trying to kick addictions or to comply with court orders, and many of whom suffer with serious mental and other problems. They are vulnerable and become easy targets to be preyed upon by drug dealers and led astray by antisocial drunken vagrants, often previous residents. The facility is a honeypot for these predatory individuals. We believe that Westview is in the wrong place. It is too close to the station and the centre of town. It is surrounded by sheltered housing and residential streets and quiet, discreet places for people to loiter aimlessly and engage in antisocial behaviour undisturbed. We are convinced that this 29-bed unit, run by A2 Dominion for a disparate group of residents, all with serious problems, is unmanageable." John Tippett Cooper, St Bartholomew Ward councillor and Hyde resident, said, "My own view is that smaller units with more tailored support would be far better than the current facility. However, this is easy to say, but much harder to do, as the right accommodation needs to be found and funding for support services needs to be provided for." County Councillor Dominic Hiscock represents the Winchester Eastgate division, which includes Hyde, and he said, "I have represented the area since 1999, when Westview House opened. There have been cycles of antisocial behaviour since then, especially during hot spells. I have huge sympathy for the people who live in the area. It's good that the police have been using dispersal orders to keep people away. Lots of the people at Westview House need support. They've had desperate and chaotic lives." Councillor Hiscock said he didn't think Westview House residents who are jailed should be allowed back after they're released. He said people were complaining about Alain House in Hyde Street, but now they have a strict no-visitor policy and it has been handled really well. The Chronicle asked Hampshire Police how many people had been arrested and moved on as a result of the dispersal order, but they have not responded. The Chronicle asked A2 Dominion to speak to someone who manages the home.
Tears shed as service honours homeless Ben. There were few dry eyes at Winchester's Hope Church on Tuesday at the memorial service of a homeless man who died just yards away from the doors of the building. 1 month ago, Ben O'Brien, 39, also known as Bob, was found lifeless at his usual spot in the Middlebrook Street car park as passers-by went about their daily business on a sunny Saturday afternoon. Pastor Tim Blaber read out tributes to Ben written by his parents and the mother of his child, describing him as a generous and empathetic man. Many in the audience were visibly moved by the stories told of his life. He attended the church and was well known to the congregation. Also in attendance was Ben's dog, Nasher, who has been recovered after going missing for a brief period following Ben's death. Speaking for Sarah O'Brien, Ben's mum, Michael Palmer said, "A lifelong Saints supporter, he always enjoyed going to the matches with his dad. Trouble could find Ben without him looking for it. Life was a real roller coaster, and in his own words, he smashed it." Rachel Langford, the mother of Ben's daughter Maggie, played a song on guitar before her words in tribute to Ben were read out by the pastor. "Ben loved us very much, and I think we had a beautiful family once." All those who spoke of Ben pointed to his generosity, warmth, and his ability to draw a crowd wherever he went. On one occasion, according to Judith Stewart, who knew him in Bristol through her church, he gave his shoes to another homeless man, leaving himself unshod. When Judith pointed out that he now had no shoes, Ben said, "Yes, but I've still got my socks, and I've got you." In spite of the goodwill of many of his acquaintances, Ben continued to struggle with alcohol and drug abuse. In the days before his death, Mr. Blaber told how Ben's health had deteriorated to the point where he couldn't walk. Ben O'Brien attended Perrin's School in Alsford and was a promising young sportsman, with one of his coaches saying he could have played for the county in 5 or 6 different sports. When he was young, Ben said he would never smoke or drink, as he didn't want to harm his athletic performance. He later worked as a team manager for Scottish Water, where he met Rachel.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Alured, Ian Alured at Kit Knox House, Curdridge, on the 15th of July, aged 77. Apps, Elizabeth Evelyn Apps, aged 93, on the 25th of July at West Home Care Home. Blake, Geoffrey Elam Herbert Blake, at the Birchers Nursing Home, Totten, on the 7th of July, aged 95. Cunnington, Christopher Robin Cunnington, at home on the 10th of July, aged 79. Felstead, Shirley Ann Felstead, née Poulton, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 13th of July, aged 83. Harbert, Barry, on the 19th of July, at home. Holmes, Gary Holmes, known as Edgar, in Brighton on the 22nd of July, aged 88. Scott, James Alexander Scott, on the 5th of July. St. Alban, Henrietta Mary St. Alban, at home on the 12th of July, aged 92. Thistlethwaite, Margaret Egner Thistlethwaite, known as Mags, née Bomber, at Basingstoke Hospital on the 16th of July. Thompson Burner, Mary Bridget Thompson Burner, on the 26th of June, aged 72. Vickers, Jeanette Loretta Vickers, known as Jan, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 14th of July, aged 82. And now we have Christian comment.
And this is headed "A Bible Story That Still Resonates," and it's written by Maura Redmond. Are we losing a common culture? For hundreds of years, certain biblical ideas and stories were regularly mentioned, while hymns and religious themes in art were widely known. There were phrases and quotes which were common currency. They might not even have a strong religious connection in everyday use. We used to play a ball game when I was young. Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, next door neighbours, carry on. I'm sure no one nowadays knows that. Over the past 50 years, much of this has slipped away. Politicians used to make biblical references in their speeches, but that would be rare now. A few concepts do live on, even if people are not always clear what they mean. You will hear mention of the prodigal son and the good Samaritan, and perhaps also the story of the lost sheep. Often people are vague about what exactly is involved and would not want to have to divine what prodigal actually means. But there is one Bible story that still resonates, the feeding of the 5,000. You will hear that phrase along with 5 loaves and 2 fishes at any event with food involved that features more than about 3 people. It is not just church events, it's been adopted for barbecues and lunch clubs and family parties. It's part of the language now. The original story is one of the few miracles that features in all 4 Gospels, as written by Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. It tells how Jesus attracted a huge crowd to his preaching, and then he and his disciples had to work out how to feed them. There is a small boy here with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what is that between so many? But Jesus performs a miracle, and this tiny amount of food feeds the entire huge crowd with a lot of food left over. It's a simple story with great charm, and it is left to you, the reader, to imagine what that might look like. If you start reading the Gospels in full, you might be surprised to find that there are 2 other versions of this story. The lesser known Feeding of the 4,000, as a biblical scholar said to me once, if it's a good story, then it will be even better if you tell it again slightly differently. And that's written by Maura Redmond.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got 11 letters this week on a variety of topics. Some of them are actually very, very brief, but anyway, we'll go through them all and we'll start off with the first one.
Right, which is entitled Nothing Changed, and it's from Jane File Brown. I was a homeowner in King Alfred Terrace near Westview House. We put up with the same issues as reported in last week's article in the Hampshire Chronicle and editorial comment, July the 25th. I organised a meeting in which 50 residents turned up, including the elderly occupants of a section of Westview House, the police, manager of Winchester Night Shelter, and the local city councillor at the time. Discussions took place about the alcohol exclusion zone and the antisocial behaviour of Westview House residents. This meeting was approximately 18 years ago, so I would like to reassure the residents of Hythe that nothing will change unless it closes. So writes Jane File Brown, Boyett Lane, Otterbourne.
This letter is from our regular correspondent and former Mayor of Winchester, Eileen Berry. It's entitled Family Needs. It has come to my mind that with the prospect of a new development in the city centre that is being proposed, the way we live, the way we shop, is changing. In the past, it would seem that we haven't considered the family unit. We have a chance to put that right. So you need diversity. There's nothing from 6 p.m. for families with children. Where do they go? Nowhere. They've seen through the day, perhaps all that the old Winchester has to offer, but then there's a period of time that everything can possibly go dead, usually from 6 o'clock. We haven't learnt the continental way, sell your goods, eat the goods that you sell. Each person could easily live above their premises, which would start to have a populace already there. That should be a criteria. What could we offer in this new development? Well, you could have an area where you could take children, not just young children, but teenagers as well, where they could perhaps spend a few hours entertaining themselves with games like bowling or snooker, etc. Your name, it, you name it, that could all be under one roof, especially in the winter. Then you could have a small library. You could have a museum with any finds of historical value on show, a toy museum. The cinema should be here, a small area performing. Yes, it could be street buskers. It could be for anyone that wanted to put a performance on. Organised, of course. What about the creative side of life? There could be something in the area. Art could be sold. There is a shortage of materials, I know, because I have to go far and wide to get mine when I'm painting or for any given art form. There should be a wealth of things for families. You need to populate the area, as I've said, and it should be stipulated that you have living accommodation above your business. Of course, you could open up the river for quiet areas. This is to reach tourists as well as young families. There is so much more, but I haven't got the room to go any further. Conclusion, it can't be on the cheap. And that's from Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock in Winchester.
And this is a letter that's headed Arts Archive, which is on much of the same subject of the previous letter. And this is from John Seeger Green. At one time, there was a proposal to turn part of the riverside into an arts and crafts centre, and I would suggest that this was taken further in discussions with Southampton University's Winchester School of Art. There are art, embroidery, bookbinding and other art and crafts societies and clubs in Winchester. I am sure there are carpenters and metal workers, for example, who would like a workshop they could share with others, but no central point where these separate activities can make use of common facilities. The Bookbinding Club, Southern Bookcrafts Club, where bookbinding is taught and practiced, with which I am involved, and being successful, is in need of additional space. We would like to see established alongside us a print workshop, a marbling studio, and perhaps a paper making repair center, creating a nationally unique book center where paper might be handmade, books can be printed, bound, provided with decorative papers, with people being taught these crafts while catering for art book design and creation, all using the same facilities. Ideally, there will be a common workshop space with adjacent activity centres around it, so that the common workshop space is used for each activity and the adjacent space for the establishing of equipment and storage areas. Papermaking, bookbinding, art books, printing, marbling and, say, embroidery could be allocated days, times for their relevant clubs to use the common workshop area, while the separate activity centres would allow their relevant activity to be undertaken by a limited number at all times. There could be a permanent art studio for the various drawing, watercolour and oil painting groups to use, and indeed a carpentry and metal workshops area provided for clubs, groups to use. And I'm sure that there are other arts and crafts activities currently undertaken in Winchester which could benefit themselves and the community by having a home where people can learn their chosen craft, use common facilities, and most importantly, can join in. Winchester could lead the way in the provision of community art and craft activity, providing education, enjoyment, and social intercourse for our community. The Riverside provides that opportunity, providing for the community while expanding available activities for students of Winchester School of Art. One learns more from working with others than one ever does from a teacher. And this letter is from John Seeger Green of St. Cross Road, St. Cross, Winchester.
This one is from J.A. Maguire, and it's called City Riddle, and it's quite short. As a Wintonian of 83 years, I applaud Simon Lever's knowledge of Winchester, but as you are a Wintonian like me, here's a challenge. Who and when, overnight, almost finished cutting a hammer and sickle into the side of St. Catherine's Hill? That's from J.A. Maguire, Wavell Way, Stanmore, Winchester. I suppose we should say answers on a postcard
to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. Indeed. And hopefully the answer will be given in a subsequent issue.
Exactly.
Anyway, we will report on that.
Yeah.
Letter number 5 is entitled Astonishing, and it's from P.V. Ward. Reading your article about the results of a GP patient survey carried out in the Winchester district recently makes me wonder just how reliable are the many various surveys about all sorts of subjects one reads about in the press so frequently. Chronicle, July the 25th. You report that St Paul's surgery in Alison Way comes out with the lowest score. That result astonished my wife and myself. We have experienced excellent treatment from this practice. And that's from P.V. Ward, Nelson Road in Highcliffe, Winchester.
And this is headed Poster's Wallet, and it's from Dorothy Quinney. I am trying to locate Andrew Henry, a postman in Winchester, as his wallet has been found in Winnell Woods. It contains his Royal Mail card and something of sentimental value, which will have to be identified before it is handed over. And this is from Dorothy Quinney of the Avenue Bishops Waltham.
Downright lie, writes Peter Rees. Health Secretary Wes Streeting is right to condemn the 2019 Tory pledge to build 40 new hospitals by 2030. It is and was a downright lie, all part of the appalling state of their government. Of the 46 new hospital programme schemes, 6 reconfigurations are finished in the same location, 20 other sites exist with no construction. What happened to the other 20 is a mystery. What is incredible is that our money for the entire UK NHS was simply handed over to undesirables who made apparently legitimate but unverified claims. For example, the £37.5 billion for test and trace lost by a senior Tory minister and just written off. £27 million given for a fast-tracked PPE contract. The person responsible made a fast buck, bought 2 luxury mansions and disappeared. This Labour government has inherited a chaotic state of public finances, the worst on record since World War II. Tory self-service has seriously weakened the fabric and foundations of the country. Chancellor Rachel Reeves has initiated a corruption commissioner to trace fraudsters, one of many initiatives to recoup fraudulently obtained public money. No matter what officers of the local Isle of Wight and Hampshire NHS think or plan, the outcome of the entire UK Streeting Review will be constraints of the inherited and substantially reduced funding available as a consequence for the national allocation of hospital-based services. The local electorate should remember that this catastrophic fate is totally and solely the responsibility of the Tories' scandalous mismanagement of the economy, their lies, corruption, and out-of-touch government. Let's also remember that this disastrous state of affairs is also due to the Lib Con Dems supporting this corrupt government for 5 years, the coalition of chaos. Without this opportunist power grab, there would have been a general election at least 9 years ago. That letter is from Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
This letter entitled Toiletries Need is from Charlotte Shears. Toiletries Amnesty was the first organisation in the UK to tackle hygiene poverty, and is the UK's only public directory that allows individuals and businesses to see exactly where their donations are making an impact in their communities and beyond. We currently support several organisations in the area, but know that there are more people out there in need of help. We know it's difficult to access enough supplies to support the amount of demand organisations are currently experiencing, and that's why we exist, to help charitable groups and the communities they serve. If you work for an organisation in need of toiletries, register for the Toiletries Amnesty Directory. It's completely free to create a listing, create a new link with your local community, and gain access to donations of hygiene products, toiletries, and more for your service users. And to individuals who'd like to donate, thank you. There are local community groups and charities in your community who urgently need donations of toiletries for those living in poverty. Help them by heading to the directory. All you need to do is enter your postcode, and your nearest organisation's contact details will pop up on our interactive map so that you can get in touch to arrange your donation. Part used and new products are accepted, but please double check with the organisation before making your donation. And that letter was from Charlotte Shears, Toiletries Amnesty in Derngate Place, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Rosemary Paul, headed Oasis of Calm. I ventured down to the bottom of the town today to meet a friend for a birthday lunch in the Palm Pan Asia opposite the Guildhall. For someone whose hearing is no longer good, this is an oasis of calm and peace away from the noisier eating houses on the main drag. It is Asian food with a tapas twist, served by the gentlest of staff who are happy to adjust the chili to your individual taste. Certainly it is worth venturing off the beaten track if finding such a happy eating place is your reward. And it's from Rosemary Paul of St. James Villa, Winchester.
Anne Buckley from the Havant Thicket Reservoir Group writes about a huge concern. I was interested to read Councillor Danny Lee's letter regarding his concerns about the Hampshire Water Transfer and Water Recycling Project when he attended a recent Southern Water drop-in session, Chronicle, July the 25th. In a recent article in the Hampshire Chronicle, a Southern Water spokesperson stated that most people attending the drop-in sessions supported the proposals. I'm not sure if that information should even be disclosed during a public consultation, but there is plenty of evidence that many do not support the proposal for a range of reasons. In June, I stood outside one of the drop-in sessions at Havant Rugby Club, and there was certainly little support for the proposal to recycle effluent water from Buds Farm Wastewater Treatment Works to Havant Thicket Reservoir. The reservoir was given planning consent on the basis that it would be spring water fed with little public opposition. There is now huge concern about the proposal. And that letter comes from Anne Buckley, Havant Thicket Reservoir Group, Oaklands Road, Havant.
And today's final letter is from Mark Byford, and it's entitled A Fitting Tribute to City Sportsmen. May I offer my support for the new sports pavilion at the King George V Playing Grounds in Winchester, being named in honour of Terry Payne, probably the city's greatest ever sportsman. This would be a fitting and just recognition locally of Terry's fantastic contribution to our national game and to the enduring legacy of excellence achieved by such a truly outstanding homegrown footballer. A member of the England 1966 World Cup winning squad, in which he played in the qualifying victory against Mexico, Terry is one of the elite 22 groups of English footballers who are rightly revered for bringing home the greatest trophy in the sport for the first and only time. He was awarded an MBE and later a World Cup winning medal. So Terry is unique to the city of Winchester in being an integral part of arguably Britain's greatest sporting triumph. But that is not all. His longevity and loyalty to his local league team, Southampton Football Club, is almost unique in the history of the game in this country. An extraordinary 800 plus appearances over an 18-year period, amassing 187 goals. Making his debut when he was still only 17, scoring his first goal on his 18th birthday, becoming team captain at just 22, scoring the goal that secured Southampton's promotion to the First Division in May 1966, and becoming Southampton's longest-serving player as an accomplished, pacey, goal-scoring winger who then turned into a commanding midfielder. What a record! Saints legend Mick Channon rated him as the greatest footballer he ever played with or against. Moreover, 19 England caps, including that World Cup match against Mexico at Wembley, mark him out as a true great of English football. Although emigrating to South Africa in 1984, Terry, now 85, has never forgotten his roots as a Winchester and Hampshire boy. He played for All Saints School and then Highcliffe Corinthians when he was growing up in the city. He then went on to play for Winchester City in the Hampshire League when he was just 15, before being signed by Southampton in 1957. In recognition of his long-standing service to Southampton, he was elected Honorary Club President in 2013. In all this context, the name of Terry Payne being linked to the new sports pavilion just a few hundred metres from where he grew up in Highcliffe would be most fitting of tributes. And that's from Mark Byford, Clifton Hill, Orams Arbour in Winchester.
That concludes our letters. Next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will be followed by First Person.
And the editorial comment this week is headed, "Drugs Wreak a Sad Toll on Communities." Two stories in this week's Chronicle highlight the scourge of drugs that have become a chronic and now barely noticed problem in Winchester and elsewhere. We report on the moving memorial service for Ben O'Brien, who died in the city centre on June the 29th. Ben was a much-loved, kindly man, and around 150 people celebrated his life at Hope Church, just yards from where he died. Sadly, it would appear that drugs got the better of him. And we return to the issue of Westview House, the ex-offenders hostel in Hyde, which is getting out of control. Local people have formed an action group to get its operator, A2 Dominion, to buck up their ideas and run the place properly. Most of the residents have drug issues, and a large number have become regular thieves targeting city centre shops. It needs to be made clear that Westview House is not a homeless hostel, such as the Winchester Beacon Night Shelter in Drury Street. Westview's residents are offenders who should be being helped on path to rehabilitation. At the moment, that laudable aim is failing dismally. At the moment, we are 15 years into the age of austerity, where central government has clamped down on public spending, even if highly ironical tax levels are at their highest levels since the 1950s. There was a time when more public money was directed at tackling the root cause of addiction. It was an investment, and the payback was reduced crime by drug addicts. In the noughties, for a few years, a service called Rupert's operated in Bridge Street, in the building that used to be Taylor's Greengrocers, and latterly the Black Bottle Wine Bar. Rupert's was operated by the Trinity Centre and successfully helped a number of drug addicts address their issues. The coalition government decided public spending needed to be cut, and the spin-off was that Rupert's closed. You can judge whether that was the right thing to do.
First Person this week is written by Kimberly Barber, and it's entitled Loyal Fan, Part of City's Heart. The Hampshire Chronicle is part of a big international operation owned by Gannett, an American news organisation that owns USA Today and many other titles. Its new chief content officer, Kristin Roberts, was over from the States, and I went up to our London offices to meet her and tell her all about the wonderful world of the Hampshire Chronicle. She was interested to hear about how the UK has maintained a strong printed newspaper industry, mainly through staying connected with our communities, and about how we are using technology such as AI to help ease the burden of production without impacting on quality. It was great to hear some of the plans from America and about how they operate too. Kristin is a small, sleek, dynamic and impressive businesswoman, a pocket rocket. Her enthusiasm is infectious. I mainly sat in awe of her throughout our meeting. On the way back, I'm on the train with my boss, editorial director Toby Granville, sitting opposite, when I notice a man struggling to get on with another woman, his wife, and an elderly lady, his mother-in-law, and bags. The elderly lady is clearly visually impaired in some way, as she is being guided on, so I ask the man if he needs any help as he lugs on bags and other paraphernalia. He politely declines, but as he does, I notice he's wearing a purple shirt and dog collar. My boss and I carry on our conversation about training courses. However, I'm thinking about the purple shirt. It's ringing a bell that it's important, perhaps a bishop. So I lean over and ask the lady what it means. The man has dozed off. It's been a long day. So she gives him a kick under the table to wake him, and she replies that he's the Bishop of Basingstoke. I tell her that I'm the editor of the Basingstoke Gazette, one of the 7 titles I'm responsible for, and we strike up a conversation about Basingstoke, or should I say Amazingstoke. I'm talking to the bishop about all the ways in which we are working with the community, and he's telling me some of the ways he is too. I'm trying to convince him that it would be a good idea for him to write a regular column for us. He's got so many interesting stories, and ultimately, he is trying to promote Basingstoke as a great place to be, much the same as us. As we are chatting, the elderly lady speaks up, "Are you Kimberly?" I'm surprised, as I haven't said my name yet, but delighted to be recognised, especially in front of my boss. She says that she recognises my voice from a recording with the Winchester Talking newspaper, which I think I did more than a year ago. She says that she's a regular listener, taking in every word and looking forward to her memory stick arriving every week. And they joke that she knows everything that's happening in Winchester, thanks to the recording and the Hampshire Chronicle. She says she enjoys the letters, and when the presenters have a laugh. And she also asks how I didn't notice a cannabis factory that was discovered 50 yards from our Winchester office in the nightclub vodka. It was wonderful to be spotted by a listener and to hear that the charity's work and that of the Hampshire Chronicle actually means something to someone. We all got off the train at Winchester, and as they walked across the car park, I made a mental note to tell the wonderful volunteers at Winchester Talking Newspaper that I met a fan. Yes, a fan of the Hampshire Chronicle, that goes without saying, but also an avid fan of their work, recording the newspaper each week without fail and distributing to visually impaired people across Winchester.
How lovely.
Oh, that was tremendous.
And that's
she liked the fact that we were laughing over the cannabis, which
exactly.
we got hauled over the coals.
Turned us off about that.
Anyway, that was great. There are no special announcements this week. Sunrise is at 5:30 in the morning and sunset is at 8:45 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And the number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
Choirs unite at Cathedral. A Hampshire cathedral has hosted an event uniting choirs from all over the South. The Southern Cathedrals Festival, SCF, hosted at Winchester last weekend, was a resounding success, drawing together Salisbury, Chichester and Winchester Cathedral choirs. Following the festival's welcome service on Thursday, sung by the boy choristers and lay clerks of Winchester, there was an extraordinary organ recital by Jonathan Hope, who provided an improvised soundtrack to Lon Chaney's 1935 silent film, The Phantom of the Opera. Afterwards, the lively festival fringe event, hosted by the Director of Music, organist and lay clerks of Winchester Cathedral, was laden with humour, musical talent and the appearance of a pantomime horse. Friday's event saw the arrival of the Chichester and Salisbury choirs, who contributed to a beautiful matin service with music by Ireland, Walton and Gibbons. At St Lawrence's Church, former chorister Verity Sawbridge gave a recital accompanied by her brother Laurie. The afternoon featured a lecture by Catherine Deans-Williams on her experiences in English choral music and a come and sing workshop led by Bob Chilcott, culminating in a performance of the Foray Requiem. The boy choristers and lay clerks were honoured to sing for BBC's Choral Evensong for the second time this year, alongside their counterparts from Salisbury and Chichester. Saturday began with a festival Eucharist featuring the massed choirs performing Rheinberger's Cantus Missae, led by Claudia Grinnell. The junior choir, directed by Mr. Burton, and the chamber choir, led by Mr. Stevens, delivered a recital of music spanning from the Renaissance to the present day. On Saturday evening, there was a grand concert featuring the Southern Cathedrals Festival Brass Ensemble. The performance opened with Sir John Rutter's Winchester Te Deum, followed by a selection of pieces, setting Jane Austen's prayers to music by contemporary female composers. The concert also included anthems by Bruckner, Stanford and Bairstow, led by the directors of music from each cathedral, Dr. Lumsden, Mr. Harrison and Mr. Halls. A highlight was Carenza Briggs' Onata Lux, commissioned for the 25th anniversary of the Girl Choristers. Interspersed with the choral pieces were interludes by the Festival Brass Ensemble. The festival concluded with the Winchester Cathedral Foundation Day. The Eucharist featured Flor Potter's Missa Festiva, followed by Choral Evensong. This was the final service for both Dr. Andrew Lumsden and Claudia Grinnell. Dr. Lumsden's 22-year tenure as Director of Music at Winchester Cathedral was celebrated with deep gratitude. His final evensong, featuring Stanford's Evening Service in A and Parry's Blessed Pair of Sirens, was a fitting tribute to his remarkable contributions.
Leisure Centre plans to be updated in September. The next stage in the plans for the university to take over a former leisure centre will be revealed in September, the council leader has said. Tory Councillor Stephen Godfrey asked for an update on the University of Southampton's plans for the former River Park Leisure Centre at Winchester City Council's recent fall meeting. Councillor Godfrey was unable to attend the meeting on July the 16th, but Council Leader Martin Topp provided a written response. Councillor Godfrey said, "It is now halfway through the five-year period agreed for the University of Southampton to develop and share their proposals for the River Park Leisure Centre site." There has been no public indication of these proposals, even during the listening event at the beginning of last year. Given how long public engagement and planning development on such important sites takes in Winchester, when does the portfolio holder expect a clear milestone plan to be published, leading to the submission of a planning application? Councillor Todd said, "I met the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Southampton in May at their annual event to mark the progress of the university's civic partnerships over the last year. We agreed to meet again in September to discuss next steps on the University of Southampton's investment plans in Winchester. The River Park Leisure Centre has lain empty for several years since the opening of the new sports centre at Bar End. It is part of the site that the City Council proposes to dispose of to the university as it expands its nearby School of Art campus in Park Avenue. Local campaigners want the site to be retained as a public space, arguing the area was left in the city for the public recreation and in the earlier 20th century. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the leisure centre, and it's looking rather sad. And there's also a picture of Stephen Godfrey, the councillor."
Fate and 10-kilometre race raises £10,000 for school. More than £10,000 was raised at the third annual Compton 10 kilometre and fate. The money raised at the event on Sunday, May the 19th, will support pupils and staff of Compton All Saints Church of England Primary School. More than 250 runners from across Hampshire completed the Compton 10,000 run on one of the warmest days of the year. The multi-terrain event, which starts and finishes in Compton and takes in views across Winchester and the surrounding area, has quickly become a firm fixture on the region's running circuit, attracting a growing number of runners from across many different age groups, areas and running clubs. Places for the 2024 run were oversubscribed. Organisers expect further places to be available in 2025. The 10K run is held in conjunction with the annual Compton School Fete, which this year attracted more than 500 people. David Ware, head teacher of Compton All Saints Church of England Primary School, said, "This event has surpassed even our most ambitious expectations, and I'm thrilled with the levels of participation, enthusiasm and support it's generating."
Councillors in climate change dispute at meeting. A row broke out between the Green Party and the Liberal Democrats over Winchester City Council's response to climate change. Green Councillor Danny Lee urged Council Leader Martin Todd to write to MPs to fast-track decarbonisation and also to ask Hampshire County Council to work closer with districts to accelerate the delivery of net zero and nature restoration. Introducing his motion at the full council meeting on July the 16th, Councillor Lee said, "Achieving net zero locally is projected to cost half as much as a national approach, while tripling financial returns and delivering three times faster. Despite this, national preparation for climate change impacts remain inadequate. It is crucial for the new UK government to prioritise climate change with additional resources to expand local actions and meet UK's net zero targets and nature targets. The government's net zero strategy estimates 82% of the UK's emissions are within the scope of influence of local authorities." Councillor Todd for the Liberal Democrats said, "There is a lot to agree with on this motion. However, most of it represents a watered-down version of the Liberal Democrat policies put forward by this administration or outlined by the party's general election manifesto, or in the case of the third resolution, something that the Liberal Democrats of Hampshire have already been working to achieve. Winchester City Council was ranked as the best council in Hampshire and the fifth best in the country for its climate action plan by Climate Emergency UK. Even if this was just a motion that repeated Liberal Democrat policy, it isn't right to pass it this evening. Most of these recommendations consist of asking people to do things they've already said they're going to do. I confess it feels odd to be asking a government that has been in place for 12 days for a government policy reset. I could contact Winchester's MP about this motion, but I would just be reminding him about the Liberal Democrat manifesto that he ran on. He added, as most county councillors present will know, I proposed in February that the county council accelerate its decarbonisation plan from 2050 to 2040. I've also been a frequent and public advocate of mainstreaming the climate emergency more strongly into their collaboration with the districts. However, I lost the argument. The Conservative Party, the Labour Party and the independent group that the Green Party has just decided to join chose not to support a faster timing. So before telling the rest of us what to do, I suggest the Green Party sorts out his own council group and get them to support Hampshire accelerating its work on climate change and nature restoration before lecturing the party that's actually doing something to try and change it. Green Party councillor Malcolm Wallace, who seconded the motion, said, during the election period, many people were frustrated at the lack of debate on the environment. The UK is likely to miss its climate targets by a long way. We can't keep delaying action and not expecting consequences. Action is being stifled. Councillor Lee said, I don't agree with what's been said. I'm asking that we take action faster. We need tangible change in how we work together. There is no harm in saying the clock is ticking. The motion was quashed, with the 28 Lib Dems voting against and 6 Tories abstaining. The 3 Green councillors voted for it, as well as independent Sue Cook.
Views split over hospital plans. Divided views between Basingstoke and Winchester residents were expressed during a consultation on plans to build a new hospital. Analysis from Hampshire Together's consultation on plans to build a new hospital for Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust shows that 70% of respondents who live closest to Basingstoke Hospital agreed with the proposal to separate planned care from specialist and emergency care, compared with only a third of respondents living closest to Winchester Hospital, 33%. As part of the consultation, NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight put forward 3 proposed options which residents, NHS staff and stakeholders were encouraged to give their views on. Under the plans, Basingstoke's emergency department and maternity services would be relocated, as would Winchester's and some services across Hampshire centralised. A dedicated children's emergency department would be created at the new hospital, as well as an obstetrician-led birthing unit alongside a midwife-led birthing unit. Services such as outpatient appointments, diagnostics, therapy services and daycare surgery would continue from the current Basingstoke Hospital site. Winchester Hospital would be upgraded to have a dedicated planned surgery centre, meaning that specialist and emergency care would be separated. When asked about the proposed locations for a new specialist acute hospital, a substantial 69% of respondents who live closest to Basingstoke Hospital were in favour of it being built on a new site near Junction 7 of the M3. In contrast, only 49% of respondents living closest to Winchester Hospital were in favour of the new site, while 40% believe in neither location is suitable. The NHS in Hampshire plans to build a new hospital and to invest in Winchester Hospital. It intends to separate planned care from specialist and emergency care, creating 2 hospitals. It is proposed that the dedicated planned surgery centre should be at the Winchester Hospital site, while the new specialist acute hospital that will provide specialist and emergency care should be either at the current Basingstoke hospital site or a new site located near Junction 7 of the M3 motorway. Respondents living near Winchester disagreed with the plan to have two separate hospitals, with 61% against this idea compared to 23% of respondents who live closest to Basingstoke.
Creative talent at the heart of communities. Civic chiefs have committed to ensuring creative talent is at the heart of our communities. A question was asked at a recent meeting about how Winchester City Council will make sure creative spaces are part of future regeneration projects. The plans for Central Winchester Regeneration include creative, community and cultural spaces, and King's Walk recently had a £300,000 revamp. Wendy Wyatt submitted a question to the full meeting of the City Council on Tuesday, July the 16th, but was unable to attend after testing positive for COVID. The Mayor of Winchester, Russell Gordon Smith, read the question. It said, "The creative industries are a major economic driver, generating 1 in 7 jobs, as 2.4 million jobs, and contributing £125 billion to the UK economy. They have grown by 50% since 2010. Winchester is uniquely positioned to capitalise on this, with over 500 practising architects, a world-leading digital technology campus at IBM, 2 university campuses, and an exceptional sixth form college which attracts students from across Hampshire and beyond. Winchester is home to significant creative talent, especially at the startup stage. For example, Alice Daggett from Winchester School of Art has just won the prestigious gold medal at Graduate Fashion Week and completed work experience with a local design business. A new film office is planned for Hampshire to attract inward investment, and there is a thriving visual arts and designer maker sector across the district. It is important that we do not lose our talent to other areas, ensuring Winchester District remains an innovative hub for the creative industries." Councillor Lucille Thompson, Cabinet Member for Business and Culture, said, "We recognise the value of people working in the creative space, and going forward, we're going to offer more opportunities for this type of space. For example, there are still other floors in King's Walk that could be put to use. We need to encourage our homegrown creative talent to stay in our district, so being able to offer more facilities is at the top of my agenda."
Parishes criticise plan consultation. Consultation on the latest draft of Winchester District's local plan has been criticised by parish councils. This comes as Winchester City Council's Scrutiny Committee examined the authority's latest plans for housing and employment sites. At the four-hour meeting on Monday, July the 29th, several parish councils said they found it difficult to access the comments that had been made in the last round of consultation 2 years ago. The latest draft of the local plan is called Regulation 19, which will be consulted on once it has had cabinet and full council approval. This will then go on to the planning inspectorate for a final examination by the deadline of June the 30th next year. The cabinet will discuss the report on September the 16th. The plan includes development at major sites such as Sir John Moore Barracks and Bushfield Camp, as well as smaller sites. Pauline Maunder, chairman of Wanston Parish Council, raised issues about a new site added at short notice. She said, "The site at Brightlands has been added with only 8 days' notice given to the Parish Council. Sutton Scotney is at constant risk of flooding and suffers from sewerage issues. The Parish Council has consistently opposed any future development until the sewerage system has been resolved. There was no allocation made in Regulation 18. The justification for including Brightlands is that Southern Water has made assurances that a pressurised pipeline will be installed. At each stage since 2019, what has been promised by Southern Water has fallen short. Our council feels let down by the local plan team. Former City Councillor Patrick Davis, a long-time member of the Planning Committee, said, "There must be a better way of dealing with these issues rather than having one meeting like this. What really concerns me is that the paper it lists is... What really concerns me is that in the paper it lists the meetings that have been held over the last couple of years that have mainly been in private for members only. It just seems extraordinary that there haven't been held, that these haven't been held in public."
City among best for family holidays. A national survey has found that a Hampshire city is the second best in the country for family holidays. Winchester was picked to the post by Canterbury in the countrywide study conducted by travel website Go Outdoors. However, the Hampshire market town beat stiff competition including Scarborough, Llandudno and Bath. The survey took into account a variety of factors such as the weather, family-friendly hotels and restaurants. Winchester was rated as the leafiest city of all those listed. Surprisingly, Winchester also has the lowest hotel prices for families, all the towns listed, coming in at an average of £88.
Greatly loved Gary will be missed by all. The assistant archdeacon at Winchester Cathedral has died after a brief illness. Canon Gary Philbrick, 67, who was appointed to the post at the cathedral in 2022, passed away in hospital where he had been receiving treatment. On Twitter, X, Gary described himself as a grandpa, chaplain of Winchester Cathedral and assistant archdeacon in the Diocese of Winchester, fan of a cream tea. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, released a statement which says, "It is with deep sadness that I write the sad news that Canon Gary Philbrick died in hospital yesterday afternoon. Our hearts go out to his family in their grief following Gary's sudden and short illness. It is hard for us all to comprehend what has happened." The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Philip Mountstephen, said, "Gary was very greatly loved in the Diocese of Winchester and would be very greatly missed." A service was held on the morning of Wednesday, July the 24th, in his memory. Born in Cheshire, he came to Southampton in 1975 to read music at Southampton University. He then became the organist of Otterbourne near Winchester, moved into the village whilst doing a PGCE at King Alfred's College, and then taught in the primary school there. In the mid-1980s, Gary went to Edinburgh for ordination training at Coates Hall Theological College, whilst also studying for a BA at Edinburgh University. Following this, Gary returned to Southampton University and completed a part-time MA in Theology in 1999. Ordained in 1986, Gary served in the parishes of Maybush in Southampton, Fawley on the eastern edge of the New Forest, and from 2000 to 2013, Swathling on the northern edge of Southampton. He was Area Dean of Southampton from 2007 to 2013 and an Honorary Canon of Winchester Cathedral since 2009. From 2013, Gary served as Rector of the Avon Valley Churches, which comprises seven churches in one parish on the western edge of the New Forest. He moved to Winchester Cathedral on the retirement of Canon Nick Fenimore. Speaking at the time, he said, "I am enormously excited by this role and am looking forward to serving Winchester Cathedral, given that I have been connected to it for such a long time through various roles.
This story comes from my own ward in the Worthies, and it says it's entitled New Sign Tells a Village's History. A new information board has been unveiled in King's Worthy to explain the village's history. It's the latest in a series of seven boards dotted around King's Worthy and Hebron Worthy, created by the local history group to share the stories of the past. The new information board tells the story of a well-used open space in the centre of the village called Broadview. Until the 1980s, Broadview was a deep railway cutting. The line closed in 1973, and the cutting was later filled in with chalk excavated during the construction of the M3 through Twyford Down. The board also explains about the development of the nearby estate, as well as one of its most famous residents, Yolanda Spann, who lived nearby in a hole in the ground with a corrugated iron roof. The board was unveiled by Roy Digweed, who has lived in the village for 66 years. The event was attended by around 25 people, including members of the history group, the parish council, and local city councillors. Before the unveiling, Roy thanked the history group on behalf of residents for their dedication in recording the village's history. He said, "I was very honoured to be asked to unveil the history board. I helped to put it together and sort out some of the photos. It's unbelievable how this area has changed, especially when you look at the photo of the cutting that used to be here. It's lovely to have this information board here to tell people about the history of our village. It's been a lovely village to live in." After the unveiling, people talked and shared memories of the area. Thanks were given to Kingsworthy Parish Council, who have funded the history board. Derek Brockway from the Worthies Local History Group said, "This is the seventh board in our villages, and the purpose is for people to understand more about their area. A sense of history is really important for a sense of community. The photos used on the boards form a part of thousands that the group is fortunate to have in its archive. We have ideas for more history boards in the village and welcome residents' ideas for any other possible locations." And there's a lovely photograph of Roy Digweed unveiling the new information board in Kingsworthy, and also a picture of a group of people who attended, including myself right at the back, but I'm very tiny, so you probably can't see me.
Scores 5,000 boost from supermarket. A school in Winchester has been given £5,000 towards an outdoor centre. The Henry Beaufort School in Hairstock received a cheque from Tesco in Winnell as part of their Stronger Starts programme. Staff and students at the school have already started planning the design and layout of their outdoor learning centre. The area is projected to help provide a vital breakout space and outdoor learning facilities. Students are expected to participate in building and planting raised beds for flowers and vegetables as part of the project. The centre also aims to help students with neurodiverse challenges access curriculum areas that they find difficult under regular circumstances. The £5,000 grant is just the beginning of the funding for this project. The school informed that they are eager to continue to collaborate with Groundworks and the Tesco team in Winnall to expand on this opportunity. While grateful for the grant, the school is also looking for additional financial help to completely achieve their goal of five main areas in the centre. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the students armed with a wheelbarrow and forks and a mower, and also holding this large cheque for £5,000.
Pop-up park work almost complete. Work on a pop-up park in the centre of Winchester is almost complete. The park in Friars Gate has been constructed as part of the Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme, also known as Silver Hill. The site has been constructed as a meanwhile use following the demolition of the Friars Gate Medical Centre earlier this year. It will leave the area a more pleasant place for people to go whilst wider plans are drawn up for the site. Benches and planters have been installed, along with a small bridge and beds of wildflowers. The site also has access to the hoardings of the dig site. Low-key and short-term archaeological work is being undertaken in the junction between Friars Gate and the entrance to the bus station. The City Council rejected calls for a full-scale dig, as happened at the nearby Brooks Centre in 1987 to 89. A Winchester City Council spokesperson said that the site is still unfinished, with more planters and seating to be installed in the coming days. Signage and information boards will also be installed around the hoardings of the dig site. The Chronicle article online attracted dismissive comments that the park would be used by street drinkers and drug addicts. But one poster, self-styled Thoughtful One, said, "They could have created a temporary creative and new tech zone in this area, attracting startups by providing subsidised container-styled units."
I think I prefer the... Small events clean up call. Winchester's new Green Party councillor has called for more help for small event organisers to help minimise waste. Councillor Suzanne White was elected in May in central Meon Valley and asked if the council could help small fetes and festivals. At the full council meeting on Tuesday, July the 16th, she said, "More guidance is needed on minimising waste and recycling for local community event organisers." Organisers of a recent well-attended local fete in Newtown in the Meon Valley were very motivated to reduce waste as well as recycle as much as possible. However, although it seems that larger festivals and events are well catered for with sustainable events advice and commercial companies that will manage and recycle the waste, many local fete organisers have found very little help for this smaller community event. Is there a toolkit on guidance from the council specifically aimed at minimising waste at these local events, or help provided for fete organisers to recycle the waste generated, especially the hard plastics? Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for the Climate Emergency, said, "Every event is different and will create different waste issues, depending on purpose, size, location, catering, the level of control by event organisers, and the availability of waste facilities. We are working in a rapidly evolving waste environment, and we need to see what we can do to help that keep up to date."
Buying, not building homes is criticised. Former city councillor has criticised the authority for adding homes to its council stock, citing the lack of affordable homes in the district. Ian Tate made the comments as Winchester City Council's cabinet approved the purchase of two houses in Stanmore and Wickham, one a former council house with two more subject to availability. Many council houses have been sold under the right to buy scheme introduced by the Conservatives in the 1980s. Speaking at the cabinet meeting on Tuesday, July the 16th, Councillor Chris Westwood, cabinet member for housing, said, "It is well known that construction costs are high and sites for development are limited, and from time to time, council properties purchased under the right to buy scheme and other off-the-shelf second-hand homes become available on the open market for purchase. The properties to be acquired will form part of the council's ambition to deliver 1,000 new homes over the 10-year programme to meet housing needs in the district." Mr. Tate said, "This doesn't address the issue of the lack of affordable homes in the district. The council buying back houses off the market, particularly ex-council houses, depletes the stock of more available housing for those who want to buy rather than rent. The new government has made it very clear that the country needs to see a drastic increase in house building. All this paper does is transfer ownership from one person to another. It doesn't increase the number of houses. I have been arguing, I can't think for how long, that what the council needs to be doing is to look for larger sites where it can build a 21st century council estate which can properly address the housing crisis. Although we're getting houses through King's Barton, the delivery of affordable housing through that mechanism is dependent on the developer maintaining the premium of their open market housing. The elephant in the room is the lack of affordable housing.
Plea for nature habitat on land for businesses. A senior Tory councillor is calling for a former army site to be preserved for nature conservation instead of a major business, retail and hotel. Councillor Jan Warwick, Conservative, whose City Council ward of Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery includes the former army base, made the comments about Bushfield Camp at the scrutiny committee for the latest draft local plan for the Winchester district. A planning application was submitted last October by the Church Commissioners in partnership with Legal and General Investment Management, LGIM, and Gisborne. This has been delayed due to advice from National Highways. The scheme includes academic accommodation, a hotel, retail, parking, sport and community pub, landscaping and public realm works. Speaking on Monday, July the 29th, Councillor Warwick said, Bushfield Camp is expected to provide approximately 11.8 hectares of employment use. This makes it the largest site for employment land, representing around 42% of the proposed employment space of the whole district. Allocating such a substantial portion of employment land to Bushfield Camp is a high-risk strategy. Whilst a broad master plan has been approved by the Cabinet and outline planning permission is in progress, we must also consider the site's unique environmental attributes. Bushfield Camp is uniquely positioned near the South Downs National Park and the River Itchen. Any development here will significantly impact biodiversity and nearby sites of national and international importance. Furthermore, the potential impact of over 5,000 daily vehicles on the local area and the motorway network remains undemonstrated by the developer to both National and Hampshire Highways. She added, "Instead of encroaching on this ecologically rich area, I would ask that this site is designated for nature conservation within the plan. Supporting its wildlife-rich habitats would enhance our natural resilience to climate change, reduce carbon emissions, and manage flood risks. With the goal of achieving carbon neutrality by 2030, developing over such a sustainable natural site with a car-led project would be a regressive move. I urge the committee to reconsider the allocation for Bushfield Camp and prioritise sustainable and environmentally responsible alternatives that align with our climate goals." The Council's Strategic Planning Manager, Adrian Fox, said, "Bushfield Camp is an existing allocation in the adopted local plan, which went through an examination process. We have a concept master plan that has been agreed by Cabinet, and we have a live planning application."
Keats inspires poetic vision for City Gateway. A Winchester architect studio has presented a poetic view of their vision of station approach. Design Engine, based on Coker Close, spoke to local business chiefs at a meeting organised by the Winchester BID at the Hotel de Vannes. Founding director Richard Jobson and Oliver Moore presented on behalf of the studio explaining their plans to integrate Keats's vision of the city with their plans to turn Station Approach into a lively social hub. Mr. Jobson explained how the Romantic poet, who stayed in the city during the summer and autumn of 1819, envisaged the city as merging seamlessly into the surrounding countryside. He said, "We don't want Station Approach just to be a place where people walk past to get to the rest of the city. We want it to be a place where people want to go to. Partners in the firm we'll be working with during the redevelopment include New Master Planning, Urban Movement, ARUP, and Stephen B. Urban Council. A concept master plan will be submitted to the Cabinet for endorsement in the spring of 2025. Over two centuries ago, Keats penned the following words on the cathedral city. "We removed to Winchester for the convenience of a library and find it an exceeding pleasant town, enriched with a beautiful cathedral and surrounded by a fresh-looking country. The Station Approach area covers the chunk of land near the railway station from Station Road to Sussex Street and between Station Hill and Gladstone Street, known as the Carfax site, after a hotel that stood there until the 1970s. It also includes part of Andover Road and the triangle of land known as the Cattle Market Car Park between Worthy Lane and Andover Road. The proposal for its development, put forward by Michael Hopkins Architects, had won a competition in 2015. The competition had been marked by several firms withdrawing because of the rules of the competition were said to be too restrictive and fees too low. The surprise veto followed concerns around potential overdevelopment, which required large numbers of parking spaces and the demolition of the former register office. In the late 2023, Design Engine was appointed to lead the project, getting things back on track. The studio has worked on a number of recognisable projects around the city, including the University of Winchester's Romsey Road campus and the Visitor Centre at Winchester Cathedral."
The new chief executive of a charity that runs a Hampshire zoo has set out her ambitions for the future. Laura Reed became chief executive of Marwell Wildlife in March, describing the position as a dream come true. Ms. Reed, who has 20 years experience of leadership, in destination management, retail, hospitality, and event sector, joined the charity from West Quay Shopping Centre, where she was destination director. On Thursday, July the 18th, representatives from businesses, charities and authorities from across Hampshire were invited to Marwell Zoo to hear from the new chief executive. The evening began with a tour allowing guests to hear from zookeepers and those responsible for conservation efforts abroad. Speaking to the crowd, which included the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, Ms. Reed said, "Since my appointment was announced, people have approached me saying, I love Marwell. I used to go as a child. Now I take my children and my grandchildren. It is an institution." She continued, "I'm very proud of the ongoing innovation and dedication I see here daily. We're also fully remain committed to our conservation projects, both in the UK and across the world." Ms. Reed, who graduated from the University of Warwick with a BSc in Biological Sciences, emphasised prioritising staff development and reaching net zero by 2035. She said, "We want to create an environment where our people can flourish. Our incredible team really care about what they do. We ought to ensure that they have the development and the opportunity they deserve to make a difference. We aim to be a place that attracts and retains the very best of talents in order to ensure Marwell is always thriving." That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks for our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, And to our readers today, who were Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
John Richard.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.